Could you just tell people what it is that is your business?
Arik Bruckner is the co-founder and CEO behind Choice.ch.
It's basically a booking platform for the entire spectrum of paid companionship, including paid sexual intimacy. There's a lot of research on dating app burnout. About 3% of the top male profiles get 90% of all the matches. That means that 97% of the male profiles only get 10% of the matches.
Before I move on to the whore in the room, which is prostitution.
We don't use terms like whore or prostitute. They're derogatory to the profession itself. There's an extremely high skill level in the provider community in this market.
I just don't understand, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to pay someone to have dinner with you?
There's also people who are just alone, let's say business travelers, and they don't want to go on a dating app because they have no intention of dating or starting a relationship. They just want to have dinner, not alone.
This just sounds really rather sad. So these are lonely people, essentially, that have trouble forming relationships. You meet people through people, and failing that, through church, or through a pub, or through some sort of social organization. One of the objections to prostitution, to sex work...
That's not the same, by the way.
That's... Okay. It isn't your app just helping to foster a society which is materialistic, which is mechanical, which is quid pro quo on these kinds of issues, which we would like to think of as something that you do within marriage and it's sacred?
Not at all. What you call sacred institutions, the fact that you just use a pecuniary reward for that doesn't mean or make it less authentic or...
It does. It takes away a kind of mystery. So, for example, in Hinduism, traditionally, they had temple whores.
As I said, we reject the term whore.
But that's literally what they call them.
That doesn't make it correct.
Yeah, it's an offensive word if you're a prostitute, but you don't like that one either. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, I have a very interesting guest for you today. I know a lot of you are quite conservative and want to sort of recreate the based society, and I know so some of you might not necessarily like this, although perhaps deep down you do like it and you're in denial. I don't know. But I thought I'd talk to him anyway. He has a very interesting business, which I think some of you would like to know about. And that is Mr. Arik Bruckner. Arik, hello.
Hi, Ed. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you for coming. Could you just tell people what it is that is your business?
Sure, yeah. So it's called Choice, choice.ch. And it's basically a booking platform for the entire spectrum of paid companionship, including paid proximity, paid intimacy, and where it is legal, paid sexual intimacy.
Right. So it's kind of like the Uber or something. I mean, how does it operate?
So Uber has there were some controversies around Uber in how they manage the business. So it may not be the best reference, but when you use Uber
or Airbnb
as a reference, I think what's a really good comparison is the kind of trust and safety that they built, right? Because it used to, I mean, before Airbnb, you wouldn't have rented out your home to strangers. But then Airbnb came, they introduced a lot of aspects like dealing with the payment flow, creating an insurance that if something happens to your home, you know, they cover all the damages, etc. And then suddenly it became a very good or well working business for people to rent out their homes when they don't use it.
Right.
So it's really about the trust.
So in your system then, what people in the same way with Airbnb, they mark how well it went and from both sides. Is this how it works?
Correct. So there's a lot of safety features that have gone into it. So we've spent about 2 years researching this. I've personally talked to over 700 paid companionship providers, and I use this very neutral term because there's a very wide spectrum of providers in this market, exchanged about 12,000 messages. So there's a lot of research has gone into it. Arguably, this sample is larger than a lot of the studies that are being made.
Now, before I move on to the whore in the room, which is prostitution, with regard to just what he's saying, sort of friends, these are people that use a sort of Airbnb-like app to have friends. Is this one of the aspects of this?
So, I mean, first, on the terminology, you know, we don't use terms like whore or prostitute.
No, I wouldn't imagine you would.
Because they're derogatory to the profession itself. So we use terms like paid companionship provider or sex worker or part of the sex work community in the extended sense. The reason for that is, and terminology is really important in this market, is that you describe what is actually provided. So if you say sex work, it implies that sex is provided, which, according to our research, is not the case in 40% of the times or of the meetings.
So in 60% it is. So the majority.
So in 60% it is. And I think what you really see there is it's not about friendship. So when you said, you know, are you paying someone to be your friend? It's about companionship. So the difference is friendship is something that is built over time. Companionship can be something that's very circumstantial, and companionship has a service component. So there's a client side and a provider side, and the focus is on the client side. So there are situations where you wouldn't necessarily want a friend, but you would need a service provider, for example, like a therapist.
Well, a therapist is, I mean, that's just a profession, though, isn't it? I mean, that's if you want a therapist, you can go and see a therapist. So what are you talking about? These people are not necessarily professional therapists or anything like that, are they?
A lot of them have educational degrees or university degrees in psychology, or they have certifications in somatic sexology or somatic bodywork, sexual bodywork, etc. So they do have a lot. I'm not saying everyone, but a lot of them do have actual education and training in the field they operate in. And what I would say is very consistent across everyone that we've talked to, or everybody that goes through the verification process on our platform, is that the level of empathy is incredibly high. So the capability or the ability to keep someone company and understand what they need in this moment.
So are you talking about this idea that someone is feeling really, really, so does it work geographically? So you put in your address and then the system tells you who's the nearest person with the skill set you desire. Is that how it works?
So first of all, you can filter. So there are filter options. Providers go through our verification process that contains, you know, verification of their identity. So a government issued ID and a selfie that they have to take. The same is valid for the clients. We use a banking grade system for that. So if you can open up a bank account remotely, we use the same system for making sure that the ID you give us is an authentic one and that you are who you say you are. And then you can filter according to services. So that's exactly what we want to introduce. A lot of the platform are heavily biased in the sense that they transpire intimacy or sexual intimacy. Whereas we understood also from client survey or potential client survey, by the way, on like across gender, so men, women, etc., where we found that the need or the demand is way more sophisticated or complex than just having sex. Some people, they're exclusively looking for proximity, holding hands, hugging, cuddling. You would not go through an intimate booking process with
them. I mean, this just sounds really rather sad. I mean, so these are lonely people, essentially, that have trouble forming relationships.
Not necessarily. So there's a difference between subjective and objective loneliness. So objective loneliness is a person is in the room and they're alone. You can see that they're alone, but it doesn't mean that they feel lonely. And on the other hand, a person can be surrounded by many people but feel lonely. And I think what you can, so there's two aspects to this. First of all, access to companionship can just be a service for when you're alone, right?
But presumably there must be a specific psychological type who gets themselves into, I imagine a man, who gets themselves into a situation where they have no intimacy at all in their life with any kind of female.
Yep.
That's what they want, even just holding hands. I mean, and I suppose also there's a degree to which, I mean, I know when I was at university, you don't get it so much in later life, but you get what I used to call fucked up friendships, where you'd have a male-female friendship, but there was a slightly sexual element to it. They would touch each other a little bit intimately, hold hands, kiss on the lips, I don't know, that sort of thing. But they wouldn't act, they were what is called in the literature backups. So you, a man and a woman, they create a number of backups of potential boyfriends or potential girlfriends in which they have a pseudo, with which they have a kind of pseudo sexual or semi-sexual or slightly physically intimate but not sexual relationship. And then there's the one that's their actual boyfriend or their actual girlfriend. And so you seem to be saying to me that what you're offering in that regard is something like that dynamic, where it's holding hands or it's kissing on the cheek or it's, is that fair?
So as I mentioned, the spectrum is incredibly wide or broad.
Yeah, but you're offering that element of the spectrum.
We offer the entire spectrum that is legal in each jurisdiction.
Right. So what do you offer in Saudi Arabia?
Companionship.
Right.
Just companionship.
That's illegal.
That's it.
That's also illegal unless they're related.
In Saudi Arabia, pay an adult for having dinner with you.
But presumably of the same sex.
Sorry?
Of the same sex, not the opposite sex.
Opposite
sex. Have they liberalized it that far now? Okay, wow, I didn't know that. I know they've liberalized things substantially. So you have this kind of visibility. I mean, I just don't understand. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to pay someone to have dinner with you?
There's an incredibly broad range of why people would do something like that. So there are a couple of indications. So first of all, you can look at the alternatives. So there's lots of situations where you are not equipped for what's out there to have companionship or romantic companionship. I mean, basically what we offer society are dating apps nowadays, because nobody talks to anyone anymore and the next generation has social anxiety issues. So there are situations where you're getting out of a relationship, a breakup, or you just don't have the self-confidence to talk to people or just talk to people that you don't know. So having a service that kind of gives you access to companionship in a professional way where the barrier or the anxiety is way less because it's a service.
So presumably one benefit of it is that it would allow autistic types or whatever who are deficient in social skills to practice social skills and practice social skills in that kind of context. It would allow someone who is incredibly nervous about talking to women to practice doing so and thus gain confidence.
Yeah, and I think we have to be very cautious. You presume that the client side is always male and the provider side is always female. And that's not the case. So there's actually according to surveys that we ran, there's a huge demand from female clients for companionship, proximity, or even intimacy or sexual intimacy with male providers. And the reason access is not there is because their number one priority is safety, and there's no safe platform out there. So we just think that consensual paid companionship across the spectrum between adults should be something that can be accessed as a service.
What is the male number one priority?
Provider verification, according to our
survey. I'm sorry, what does that mean?
Whether the photos are real, basically.
Okay, so okay, all right. So it's that she looks like she says she does.
Correct.
I see.
And I think there's interesting research on, just because you mentioned autistic people or people who don't have the self-confidence to talk to others, there are very interesting stories that we've heard over time from providers. Like, for example, people with trauma, like sexual violence trauma, for example, they are very distanced from touch, and they almost need a professional environment to get back or get used to touch. Because if it's a professional environment, a service, you can control as a client, you can control the speed at which you're going, you can ask questions, you can...
So let's say a woman's been sexually abused by her father when she was younger or something like that, molested, and she has vaginismus. So she tightens up in response to sex, you know, she's calm, and that she can slowly practice with some person like this and thus not embarrass herself with a boyfriend.
So one specific example that, or one story that comes to mind is, yes, a sexual violence victim that didn't dare to wear shorts anymore for approximately 5 years. So because they didn't want to show any kind of skin, and the ability to have access to a male professional companion and then rediscover touch step by step at their own pace,
right,
was an extreme value add on rebuilding that confidence.
Can you give me some other examples? Without, obviously, without giving away too much of something that is not covertly or overtly sexual.
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, if you look at the statistics, there's a very good one by Forbes on dating app burnout. There's a lot of research on dating app burnout. A lot of, actually on both sides, male and female, users are burned out of the dating app experience. So when you're frustrated, and there's a couple of reasons. So for example, female users are burned out because they're getting inundated with requests. And language is oftentimes harassing. And so for them, the value proposition is paying for a service so they get a high quality interaction during a dinner that focuses on them, on their needs, their topics, and the same on...
And so how does this help them?
Sorry?
How does this help them to have a dinner, paying someone to have dinner with them, who will talk about their needs and their topics? Is it some sort of practice thing for real life situations, or how does this help them?
It's a good experience. It's a positive experience. I mean, you pay for a lot of positive experiences. Why would you go to the cinema to have a good time? Why do you go to a theater to be entertained? It's the same thing, but on a companionship level. Because I don't know if you've been on dating apps, but if you listen to the stories on what's happening on dating apps, and I mean, it's clear. I mean, look at the business model. There's no incentive for dating apps to focus on having a good experience, because they want you to come back and back and back again.
No, I've not been on a dating app ever. I guess partly because I'm 44 years old. I don't know if that's relevant.
I don't think so.
Well, because there were no dating apps when I was young. And partly because how you meet people, and I can't stress this enough if you're watching, is through people. That's how you meet people, through people, or through being at the pub. And I don't understand it, to be honest. Like, even in northern Finland, where I live, me and my friends, we go to the pub, we get chatting to people. That's how you meet people. That's how you meet girlfriends. And I cannot understand why you would do anything other than that. That you meet people through people, and failing that, through church or through a pub or through some sort of social organization.
There's actually research on that. And I mean, I'm a very extrovert person as well. I don't have problems talking to people, but that's from a social or socializing perspective, networking perspective, a very privileged situation. And there's interesting research, so by the late John Cacioppo, on loneliness in general as a broader topic. He spent his entire academic career on loneliness in the U.S. And he describes a state of hypervigilance, So basic, and it's a self-reinforcing cycle. So people in a lonely state, subjective lonely state,
yes,
are building up this hypervigilance towards social connections.
What do you mean hypervigilance? Like
hypervigilance
anxiety.
As in hypervigilance as in they are vigilant as to what could happen with the social connection. And that leads to it being interpreted as a threat. And that in turn reinforces isolation and so forth. And so one of the proposed intervention mechanisms could be paid companionship. Because it's a binary state. Somebody is at home or they're in the pub. But if you're in the pub with a, let's say, wing person that you're paying to be your wing person,
right,
helps you get into a state where you can foster social connections in a more natural way.
But it's, I suppose the point is, with a lot of these, with these kind of applications or ways of thinking, there's a degree to which, let's say, you're in love with a girl and she's in love with you, and you can logically reduce that down to a series of chemicals that are being produced and down to factors such as optimum genetic similarity, such as various trade-offs between the looks and psychology that have been made. You can analyze it and you can, but this kind of undermines something almost sacred, something eternal, something higher that about it. And so in general, one tends not to do that. One might do it afterwards if you break up or something, but one tends not to be really analytical about it at the time. And then this gives things meaning. And even if things really have no meaning, it gives interactions meaning and makes them special. And thus gives life meaning. And it seems to me, what occurred to me about someone being paid to listen to you and touch you, my wife is a Lutheran priest, and she does. I mean, she's basically being paid to be nice to people and help them in difficult situations. They pay a church tax, they pay a small percent of their income to be Lutherans, and then, for example, there was one case where my wife was called out because this woman had come home and her husband had killed himself. And so my wife turned up at this woman's place, mm-hmm. and then the woman just broke down immediately, and they just hugged and said nothing for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, what that was, in a sense, was paid companionship, because she's paid a percent of her income. Therefore, she has access to that vicar. But you don't think of it in those terms.
Yeah.
There's some broader set of distances from it where you can say, oh, well, no, she's a paid member of the church for spiritual reasons. And it happens to be the case that then this is the consequence. And that's rather lovely. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think what you're doing is making the financial, the quid pro quo element of it, the scientific element of it, if you like, really out there and clear, which has the capacity to be damaging to things that might be better for society, like a general sense of awe and mystique and meaning.
I wouldn't say that it's damaging institutions that are already there and positive for society. I would say that it extends the positivity of the existing institutions, because in this particular example, that woman was lucky enough that there was capacity for someone to go to her home and provide that companionship, that paid companionship, yeah, in that sense.
Indirectly paid
companionship. But let's assume, so, I mean, if you look at any research or any statistic, like 1 in 3 people are lonely. So over the course of our lifetimes, how often are we in situations like that? Probably multiple times. And not everyone has that insurance. And even if they had that insurance of somebody being able to go to their home, the capacity is not there for, if this happened to 100,000 people right now, there's not 100,000 people that can go home and provide that very necessary paid companionship. So we just think that this is not a replacement of existing institution.
I'm showing the parallel.
It's an addition.
The Church of England, for example, charges 500 quid to conduct a funeral. It's not a membership church where you tithe like the Lutheran Church. So you pay outright 500 quid to do a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the priest is very nice to you and he comes and sees you and he's all, you know, holy and stuff like this. And so it's essentially kind of paid companionship, really. He's there to part minister to your feelings and all this kind of stuff. But again, it's not overt. There's this idea that you're giving that 500 quid for the good of the Church of England, not this person personally. And the other thing I was thinking is, we all know, in evolutionary terms, there is a dynamic between men and women whereby men want sex and women want resources. And women sexually select for men who can give them resources, and men sexually select for women who are young and fertile and whatever. And there's variance in that. It's a simplification, but that's generally what's going on. And I think one of the objections to prostitution, to sex work, to actually...
That's not the same, by the way.
That's... Okay. To having sex with a man in return for money is that it makes that dynamic that we all know and that makes us seem animalistic and makes us seem mercenary, it makes it so overt and we're in denial about it and we don't want to think about that. Even though we know deep down, a lot of men know the part of what has attracted their wife to them is their status or their capacity to gain status. And a lot of women know that part of what has attracted their husband is their looks and their youth and that kind of thing. It makes it so plain. And isn't your app just helping to contribute to that and therefore just helping to foster a society which is materialistic, which is mechanical, which is quid pro quo on these kinds of issues, which we would like to think of as historically as something that you do within marriage and it's sacred?
Not at all. I think you made an interesting, you know, an interesting point. I think what is crucial here is the way a platform is designed and what the objective of the platform of the business is.
Now, before we continue, I'd like to tell you what's been quite exciting. I know that you Generation Z people want to know all of the base knowledge. You want to read all of the base books, but you don't really like reading. So what if there was an app that would take those books, summarize them for you in less than 25 minutes and read them to you? Well, fortunately, such an app exists, and it's called Legion.com. And, oh, what's that? That's my new book, Woke Eugenics, which argues that wokeness is a selection event that will make us genetically fit once again. There's the book. Click on it. And you can hear it read in my voice. Well, I mean, like, sort of my voice, AI version of, sort of, but basically my voice. And then it can be summarized for you and you can imbibe the base knowledge. It can be injected straight from your phone, baseness, straight from your phone into your brain box. And if you sign up today and use the code TJH, then you can get a 10% reduction. So that's Legion.com. All the base knowledge straight from your phone into your brain box.
I'm not saying the dynamic that you mentioned is something, you know, that we support, but there is a platform that does exactly that. It offers it offers a match between wealthy or successful men to young, beautiful women. There is a platform for that, but that's not what we want to do. That's not, because paid companionship is more sophisticated, more complex than looking for beauty or looking for success. It is very individual. There's a broad spectrum of clients and providers, and there's a huge spectrum of services. And we believe that paid companionship is actually helping the what you call sacred institutions, and by creating very high quality experiences that are actually liberating or good for your mental health as well, because there's a lot of positivity associated to it. One example is, for example, there's a lot of intrinsic fantasies or things that people want to try out, curiosity that actually consumes them and sometimes even makes them feel ashamed. And in a professional environment where safety is provided and there's professional providers and high quality experiences, people can actually, they don't even need to live out the fantasy, but they can talk about it in an open environment with a professional to sort of just be educated, share know-how. And I think that's an entire angle that gets completely ignored.
So if you have a sex work community, obviously, if you have a sort of a fetish,
for example,
bondage or spanking or something like that,
mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to meet people who are reliable that would engage in that, because frankly, the correlates psychologically of having a fetishism are things like psychopathy, and these things correlate. You know, you get people that are, for whatever reason, turned on by this because of, and there's just people that are just nasty, like hurting people. And so presumably you are able to filter those people out via the app.
That's through the verification process, yeah. It's very extensive.
People that are just high in openness or have developed a fetish because they're autistic or something, whatever the reason, can meet people that are safe.
Yeah.
And it can be trusted that when you use the safety word, and a banana or something, then they will stop rather than be black and blue.
It's way more complex than that. There's an entire preparation process. That's why, for example, we ourselves are educating... are creating educative podcast episodes with providers where they explain the amount of work or preparation that goes into meetings. You know, it's incomparable to a dating app experience where you just meet someone or meet 10 people and figure out which one you want to see next. There's an entire process of professional providers that want to understand, you know, who are you? What is your situation? You know, what is the need? And it can be longer or shorter, depending on what is needed. You know, like there's also people who are just alone, let's say business travelers, and they don't want to go on a dating app because they have no intention of dating or starting a relationship. They just want to have dinner, not alone. And the fact that you pay someone for their time, and you should be able to do that without going through a platform that's unsafe or very explicit in nature, is something that we are 100% convinced should exist and is actually helping or supporting existing relationships, marriages, because in a professional environment, there is a lot less risk of a relationship being developed because it's circumstantial. There's a start and a finish, and the other person is a professional. There's a lot of education that has to go into this because the media portrays what you would call on a normal distribution the tails. They either portray the very high end sort of escorting luxurious lifestyle, and on the very low end the human trafficking and the coerced, forced prostitution cases. But these are tail ends. If you believe an estimate by the UN, IMF, and World Bank, or a cross-reference of those estimates, sex work in its current stigmatized form, so including the 40% or whatever percentage it is on a global scale of paid companionship, it contributes between 0.5 to 2% of global GDP. So let that sink in. And then just by the sheer size of this industry, it cannot be tail stories. There's a huge mid or center of this industry that is not portrayed by the media that we are educating about.
Are there things you think in life that one shouldn't be able to pay for?
That's a very big question. I do think there is an age at which we have to assume that in a stable mental state, you have the ability to give consent to a variety of things. Perhaps not everything, but a variety of things. And being able or giving consent, ongoing consent, to provide companionship, proximity, intimacy, and sexual intimacy, we believe is definitely part of that. If you can consent to knee surgery, so somebody, you know, putting you under anesthesia and perform open surgery on your body, like cutting it up, basically, then you should also be able to consent to keeping someone company.
Right, sure. But do you think that there's a line? Do you think, it seems to me that what you're dealing with is a sort of incremental line where you start off by saying, well, you should be able to pay to have a therapist, and this allows you via a very convenient system to find out there's a therapist that's 5 minutes away or something, and that they can come to your house and talk to you for an hour. You've got that. Or you have a bad back and you want someone to massage. This kind of thing is on there, right? These kinds of stuff. Then we move on from that to just, as you say, paid companionship. I want someone to talk to about how I feel. Maybe that they're not a professional, but I just want someone to talk to. And then I just want someone to hold my hand. I want someone that I can practice, a woman who I can practice talking to women with, which is an interesting idea.
Or a dating app workshop.
What?
Or a dating app workshop.
What would that be?
So statistics show that about 3% of the top male profiles get 90% of all the matches.
Right.
So that means that 97% of the male profiles only get 10% of the matches. So there's a high degree of frustration with those users. So being able to sit with someone, a woman, or the kind of person with the kind of gender that you're looking for on the dating app,
right,
and getting a professional feedback on how you behave on the dating app for you to actually be successful there is very valuable education.
But so then we move up, and eventually we move into areas which many people would consider to be rather less wholesome, such as you say, sex work. Now there's different elements of that. There's up to and including penetrative sex, which you seem to think that's fine, and doesn't challenge any.
There are preconditions. If it's between adults and if it's ongoing consensual, so if both parties are consenting to the interaction on an ongoing basis, then I think it's fine. Yes. So in a safe environment, in a controlled environment, potentially facilitated through technology, yes, I think it's fine. And I think it even has a positive effect. There's a huge gap on intimate education in society that is actually hurting relationships of all sorts, all kinds, because there's just limited education. The biggest part, or the biggest source of intimate education, is adult entertainment. And there's a ton of research on that. And as it says, it's adult entertainment. It's entertainment. You don't study physics by watching action movies, right? So being able to have access to a very nuanced set of services, such as, you know, an intimacy workshop or a consent workshop. Like, how do you consent to something you've never done? How do you do that? That's a question that's actually not as easy to answer. Like, how do you communicate with your partner about certain desires that you have or things that you want to try out? How do you do that? A lot of people struggle with that, and they don't have anywhere to go, because what we offer them is either a therapist in a very clinical setting, or friends. Maybe you don't want to talk about your very intimate and personal desires to your friends, or dating apps where you just meet strangers and you don't want to necessarily talk to a stranger. So having someone, a platform where you can, in a very specific way, talk or do something with a professional in a safe environment is something that we feel is absolutely needed and justified.
I mean, it is true that a lot of what religion has done historically is fill gaps like that. But the thing is, it sanctifies it and makes it less bad. So, for example, in Hinduism, traditionally, they had temple halls. And the idea was that, well, basically, you're paying to have sex with a young girl. But because that girl is considered to be the embodiment of a particular goddess, you are paying to have sex with that goddess, and you are bonding, you are communing with that goddess. And therefore, what is actually happening, which is that you're having sex with a young prostitute, essentially, is no longer as bad. And for the family that have put her in the temple, she's not just some prostitute. No, she's the embodiment of Shiva or something.
See, that, for example, just by definition, when you say young girl, it cannot be consensual, because a young girl cannot consent to this kind of act.
I suppose in that context, I'm talking a couple hundred years ago. I don't think they have temple halls anymore. Maybe they do.
And by the way, I mean, as I said, we reject the term whore.
But that's literally what they call them.
That doesn't make it correct. So I'm just highlighting that.
Okay, well, yeah, it's an offensive word if you're a prostitute, but you don't know that one either. But whatever. That's what they call them. But the point, it goes back to what I said earlier. They sanctify it. They're sanctifying it, and so then it's considered less bad, less of a. But it's an outlet, as you say. It's an outlet for a certain kind of low status male, who can't get women, and you have the same thing in Afghanistan with what they call boy play. So they dress it up as these boys are trained musicians and are singing for you and enchanting you and whatever. But so it is something almost religious about it. But ultimately, it's dressing up the same thing.
But so sanctifying something that is inherently not consensual is something very terrible. But that's not what we're doing.
No. But I'm just trying to come up with. I'm trying to draw a parallel with again. What you're making, there's a level on which you're making something quite materialistic and obviously involving just the exchange of money for
So we make it transparent and safe. When I mean, there's an interesting book on some of the parallels or analysis on sex work, and there's a lot of transactional things that go on subconsciously in relationships, most likely every day, like favors. You know, you do this, I do that, we do this, etc. I mean, it's happening all the time. The fact that you just use a pecuniary reward for that doesn't mean or make it less authentic or worse.
It does. It takes away a kind of mystery.
I would completely counter that. If you want mystery, I bet you in a professional environment you get more mystery than in a personal one. And because there's an extremely high skill level in the provider community in this market. I mean, think of it. If you do something as a profession, you're good. You're eventually good at it. You're trained. So it's only logical that whatever experience you're seeking, if you do it with a professional that's done that for 10 years, it'll be a high quality interaction.
I suppose you could argue that there is something less, rather less seedy about your app, if you want to have sex with a sex worker, than going to Amsterdam and they're in the windows and you say, I'll have that one. And so on. I mean, there is something rather less. It's the whole environment of that area of Amsterdam. If you've been there,
I would say so. Street work in general, where the Amsterdam example is probably considered to be a safer environment because it's sole proprietorships. It's on an indoors environment as opposed to standing outdoor, for example. There are a couple of components, but we still think. It's not a very positive work environment because you're standing there, as opposed to being able to do something else and then schedule appointments ahead of time, just like it's been done in literally any other industry. I mean, if you're selling a consultancy service, you wouldn't stand or go out and stand on the sidewalk waiting for somebody to. Ask you about consultancy services, right?
Right.
So that's the same logic that we apply to this industry. It's just more positive, better for providers to be able to online advertise what they offer in a transparent and safe way, and then pre-schedule meetings.
And how many countries are you operative in?
Right now, that varies on the provider availability. So they can add availability in almost every country. And right now it's about 6 countries, probably, but it can change daily.
So which countries?
So right now Switzerland, the UK, Germany, France, Spain, and the US.
And how are you going to expand into all kinds of other places? Have you got a sort of business plan to expand into the third world or into... further?
So right now we are backed by impact investors. So investors that not just invest for financial gain, but also to have an impact, a positive impact, and by creating educational content. So that's basically, we focus on the provider community for our expansion.
Would you expand, I mean, could you just expand it into just industry? Like I need to have a person to put up a shelf. Is there one near here?
I wouldn't say that's so. That's where we draw the line at romantic companionship. I think even friendship is probably not something that our app or the platform is for. Even though you could technically get it, but there's a focus that you have to have in any business, and I think that's where we would draw the line. So while somebody could help you build up a shelf, it's not that wouldn't be considered the core of our business.
You could be a one-stop app for everything that people need in a hurry.
Not in a hurry.
Well, yeah, I want someone to put up my shelf now. I don't want to ring up some handyman and say, oh, I can come next week. I want immediately.
So that's the thing. If you want a high-quality experience, it's not happening now. Because there's preparation that needs to go into it. There's communication that needs to happen. And that I think that's a misconception. So that's the other...
So it's not like Uber then? It's not like an immediate car?
No, it's not like Uber because there's preparation that goes into creating high-quality experiences. And communication as well, that's necessary. Yes, if you've met someone several times and you've done that communication, of course it can be scheduled on shorter notice, but... This idea of you push a button and somebody shows up on your doorstep, that's not how high quality experiences are created.
Right. So in that sense, a better metaphor is
Airbnb.
Is Airbnb. Okay. Is Airbnb. And have you had, what kind of feedback have you had from the those who've used it?
So, I mean, the entire segment of providers and clients is very broad. The feedback that we've received is so far very positive. So people see what we are doing. They see the amount of effort that goes into building safety features, into communicating transparently, clearly, creating high-quality interactions on both sides, actually. And just 2 weeks ago, we had our first booking request by a female client, and that person applauded us for the safety features.
And so it has all been men so far, until her.
Yes.
So it is rather male.
No, it's just fire. That building a safe system, A, is very difficult, and B, is not known. We're a new brand, so I guess female clients need to first understand and learn that there is a platform like that out there.
Okay, so I'm just having a look at it now, chaps. So we have companionship, dinner together, opera night, holding hands, movie night, intimacy workshop, spa experience, pleasure training, BDSM introduction, certified intimacy massage, and intimacy, which is presumably a euphemism for sex. And then we have examples. So in Glasgow now, there is this bird. She is, I get the impression, Hungarian. Hello, I'm Eva, your high-class companion from Eastern Europe. In Zurich now, there's Elia. I see. I'm a somatic... What is a somatic practitioner?
So a somatic body worker is, or practitioner, is people that have training on touch.
I see. And then Julian Martin is in Zurich. In Glasgow, I'm Demeanor Blaze, statuesque tall woman. What does she do? She's 5 minutes away.
No, 5 minutes is the average response time to a message. If you would send a message, that's sort of the time frame that you could expect an answer.
Right. Okay, all right. What does she do? She has lots of pictures of her. Yes.
So the services that you mentioned, that's not the entire service catalog. There are about 200 services right now on the platform. So 200 services. These are just sort of giving a visual depiction of, and we're going to expand this, of what the paid companionship spectrum is. You know, where it ranges from. A lot of people would not think intuitively about a service called pleasure training, which is actually super valuable, because in a professional environment, you can actually train certain things that you may not want to or not dare to discuss or do with a partner, you know, if you want to get better at something. And we as society, we just don't talk about a lot of these things. And that's what we want to introduce, the transparency factor, that you can actually access pleasure training if you want to.
There's issues. But anyway, it's been very interesting to talk to you, and it's certainly an interesting idea. So thank you, Ak. Thank you for coming on, and I will see you soon, chaps. Goodbye! Hello, you naughty little heretics. Now, here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, I like to interview people who are controversial, people whose ideas are excluded by the mainstream. As you can tell from today's interview, this doesn't mean I always agree with them, but I like to interview them anyway because I find them interesting. I suppose I'm a kind of a based Louis Theroux. And if you'd like to see more of my interviews, then most of them are on Substack, where if you like, you can support me for the cost of a pint of beer a month. Thank you, and I hope this is of interest.